So how many people here will want to do the will of God? Raise your hand. That's good. All right. So that's going to be my focus on the sermon this morning. Who wants to know and do the will of God? So that leads to other questions like, what does it mean? What is the experience of those who live in the center of God's will? So we have people ranging from young people like me, just kidding. I'm not the youngest here anymore, right? I'm actually middle-aged now, believe it or not. No, nobody else is shocked, but it's hard on me for a little bit. We have people who are 5 and 15, 25 and 35, and up to, how old are you, Jim? 76. I hope I make it to 76. What does it mean to live in the center of God's will? What is that experience like? I used to think that those who lived in the middle of God's will had an easier life. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." I used to think that if you were in the middle of God's will, you'd feel secure and free from care. And I still think that mature Christians do live secure and they do trust in God. But we don't go from childhood and naive thinking straight into maturity. It's not how it works. I don't want to oversell this, okay? We don't go from childhood and naive presuppositions straight into mature thinking and trust in God. So what's the path? Well, the path is the center of God's will, but it doesn't always feel that way. It doesn't always feel that way. How do you go about finding God's will? How did Isaac get his wife? Did Isaac find God's will in a wife? Well, he did. Isaac waited on his dad to send a servant who went out to this strange city he had never been to before, and the first 5 minutes he's there, he finds a wife for Isaac. He prays and says, "God, I got this problem. I have no idea who anybody is here. I have this master that sent me here, and I'm supposed to find a wife for him, and I have no idea where to start. And if you do have the right wife, how about you just bring her over here? I'll ask her for a drink, and she'll gladly give me a drink, plus water all the camels." All right, that is quite the prayer, all right? And before he's done praying, I mean, here comes Rebecca, and bingo, game over, all right? She says, he says, "Can I have a drink?" And she says, "Yes." And she's good looking, she's pretty. I mean, she's knocking down every checkbox he's got. And then, he asks her who she is, and she's the right person, and she waters all the camels. And I mean, this is great, okay? And I was reading Adam Clark on this, and he says, yeah, this is what you can do if you're in that situation. God will answer prayers like that. Well, I want to ask you, how many of you have been that desperate for an answer from God? Almost nobody, okay? Almost nobody has been in that situation. I have no idea what I'm doing. I have this task, and I desperately need an answer, and so God sends you an answer. That happens, but only when you're that desperate. Now, if you're trying to find a wife or a spouse in this market, you got more options, so God doesn't answer like that, okay? You don't got the same situation, so you don't answer the same way. How do you go about finding God's will? What is the experience of being in the middle of God's will? Joseph was sold into Egypt. Was he in the middle of God's will? He absolutely was. Was that enjoyable, restful, and peaceful experience while he's going on the camel or probably walking beside the camel to Egypt? No, sir, no, ma'am. Okay? What about Jonah? He's in a ship. He's going up and down. He's sleeping soundly. He's peaceful and he's secure. All right? He is resting. He's not resting in God's will, though. He's in the middle of God's will. God's going to have him right out inside a fish in about 10 minutes. But, all right? Jonah experienced God's will, but it wasn't easy. All right? And so you and I, if we want to find God's will and do God's will, we have to have the right expectation for what that's going to look like, or we're going to wonder, am I following God? I didn't think it would be like this. It's confusing. I remember being 21 and thinking, you know what? I would like to be married. And so I started the process of finding a wife, and I think different than most people. So I had some things to learn, all right? And you know what? My wife, my current wife, when I was 21, she was still in high school. And she wasn't ready to graduate either yet, all right? And so God had a plan. I was in the middle of his will, but boy, it didn't feel like it. All right, I had things to learn. And so it took me a long time to learn all those lessons, all right? I had to learn the school of hard knocks, a brutal school. But I learned. But in the middle of all that, I was doing what God wanted me to do. I was learning, all right? And it didn't feel like God's will. But when I look back, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what God wanted me. He wanted me to learn all those lessons. If I had not dated before I met my wife, I wouldn't have landed her, okay? She would have skipped town because I needed to learn all that stuff. What does it mean to find and live in the will of God for an immature Christian? It can be a little upside down sometimes. It can be hard. And in the middle of that, we're asking God, what? And God is asking us the question, who are you? Who are you becoming? That's what happens. And in the middle of that, we are changing, and he is delighted to see that. We're going to follow Isaac's experience later in life with following God's will. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 26. And we're going to read 1 through 35. Genesis 26, 1 through 35. Genesis 26, 1. And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. And the Lord appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed will I give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, oh, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. And it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah his wife. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety she is thy wife. How saidest thou she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. And Abimelech said, what is this that thou hast done unto us? One of the people might have lightly lied with thy wife, and thou shouldst have brought guiltiness upon us. And Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. So then Isaac sowed in that land, and received in the same year an hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great, and went forward, and grew until he became very great. And he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great store of servants. And the Philistines envied him. And all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, well, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. And Abimelech said unto Isaac, go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelled there. And Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham, and he called their names after the names which his father had called them. And Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. And the herdmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdmen, saying, the water is ours! And he called the name of the well Esek, because they strove with him. And they digged another well, and strove for that also. He called the name of it Sitna. And he removed from thence and digged another well, and for that they strove not. And he called the name of it Rehoboth, for he said, for now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. And he went up from thence to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father, fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. And he built an altar there, and called upon the name of the Lord, and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants digged a well. And Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahuzah, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of this army. And Isaac said unto them, wherefore are you come to me, seeing ye hate me, have sent me away from you? And they said, well, we saw certainly the Lord was with thee. And we said, let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, we have done nothing unto thee but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of the Lord. And he made them a feast, and they did eat and drink. And they rose up betimes in the morning, and swear one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said unto him, we have found water. And he called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. So, in finding the will of God, one of the things as I pondered this was a phrase that drove me crazy. God leads by opening and closing doors. I hated that phrase. If God is God in heaven, and he made me, and his spirit can speak to me, and I am tuned to his spirit, surely he can just tell me what he wants me to do. Why do we have to wait for opening and closing doors? Why can't he just tell me ahead of time? I can just do it. I hated that phrase. Is that acceptable? Does God lead by opening and closing doors? I mean, look at the people in the Bible. Isaac had a wife straight up. He's had God's talks to him multiple times during this passage here. Does God lead directly, or does he lead by opening and closing doors? Well, let's look. Verse 1, and there was a famine in the land. It's about 100 years after the first famine in the days of Abraham. And Isaac is going down to Egypt, apparently. In his mind, he's headed to Egypt. He stops by a Gerar of the Philistines on the way to Egypt. Now, Isaac is leaving his area. I'm going to try to draw this out a little bit here. I think this is roughly accurate. Here's the Sea of Galilee. Here's the River Jordan. Here's the Dead Sea. And Gerar is down by the seashore. Closer down here, I believe Beersheba is up in this area somewhere. So he's headed this way and down. Why is he there? Because they ran out of rain. Yeah, he lived with cattle and sheep and was good with that. They had no rain. He needs rain. He needs water. Egypt has lots of water. I'm going down to Egypt. My dad did that. I'm doing that. God stops him. Okay? God stops him and says, you're supposed to stay right here. You stay here right now. So God closed the door on Isaac staying here. How did he know that? Because it stopped raining. Look, if God has you in a place and it stops raining, you are not just supposed to stay there and die, okay? It is okay to find find a workable solution, all right? Does God lead by opening and closing doors? Well, he did this time. Now he's moving, and God stops him. He has a plan. God shows him, no, you can't do that. And I do find that that happens. God takes, wait, have you ever driven a tractor or a car that doesn't have power steering? All right, how do you get that wheel to move? Well, you first put it in gear, you start moving it, and then it turns, okay? It don't turn very well if you don't have it moving. And that's how we are, all right? We don't turn real well when we're moving. If you're just sitting there like, well, God, which way should I go? Which way should I go? All right, that's not really how God helps us, all right? We got to have a plan. We can plan and get going, and then God directs us as we're going. All right, so he goes. And God stops him. He says, you sojourn in this land. You stay here for a while. I will be with you. I will bless you. So he does. Isaac listened to God. This is good. We should always listen to God, especially when he speaks to us in dreams, all right? He puts this to practice. And he's scared of the men of the place. They look at his wife. They're like, wow, I would like a wife like that. And he knows that. And he says, they say, well, who is she? Well, she's my sister. He's scared. And we're not going to dwell a whole lot on this. He lies, and Abimelech, the upper echelons of society, the elite, they had worked with Abraham, or their grandfather had, and I'm sure the stories are passed down. And when Abraham and Sarah had pulled the same stunt, everybody in the whole tribe stopped having children. Now, in America, we'd think that's great. Not back then. They wanted to have more kids, okay? And incidentally, if we don't have more kids as a nation, we're toast as well. But that's another conversation, all right? They were afraid, all right? They were afraid that they were afraid of him. So when Abimelech looks out and sees Isaac making moves on his wife that were obviously not brother and sister, whatever they were doing, okay? He calls him in and he is furious. He is very upset. He's like, you could have brought a deep judgment from your God upon us for what you have done. And Isaac said, well, I know, I was scared. All right? So Abimelech isn't taking any chances here. Abraham had done the same thing. So he tells the people, don't you even think about touching this man or his wife. I mean, it's kind of like, how do you do when you're telling your children the last thing? If you guys do this one more time, you're going to get a spanking, right? You're going to get it. He tell you that's what Abimelech said. So now, God told him to stay. He's staying. And he goes out and he sows in that year, it says. And God gave him a huge blessing. Agricultural and business blessings are the blessing of God. Don't forget that. We may be managed as well as we can. We may learn all the right lingo. We may dress the right way. We may approach people the right way. It doesn't matter. You can stick your seed in the ground. The blessing of God is what we're looking for here. We still need the blessing of God. And God does bless him. It says, verse 13, it says, the man waxed great, went forward, and grew until he became very great. This is the Old Testament. God's blessing is physical. We have blessings today, too. Barnabas had land, all right? He sold it and helped his people, you know. But so God has him here. He told him to stay here, and he said, I will bless you. This is Isaac's experience directly in the will of God. Who doesn't want that? This is fun, all right? He is growing. Every year he gets more servants. Every year he has more cattle. Every year he has more money and more wealth. And God is blessing him. This is a wonderful place to be. Wow. I don't know why I ever thought of going to Egypt, he probably thought. This is just wonderful. I get to talk to the king. Nobody touches me. Everybody is being kind to me. They're all a little scared of me. And this is wonderful. All right. So, verse 15. The Philistines still didn't actually live here, by the way, not for a couple hundred years. The main colony was some island or something, and they were still expanding slowly. But they had ideas about where their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren would be, kind of colonized this already, and maybe they had control over areas like this, but they hadn't used it yet. Now, we got to have a little discussion about wells. What is the benefit of a well? Well, obviously you get water, but a cow or a sheep can travel a half a day's journey or even 3 or 4 hours out from a well and eat and eat and eat and eat and then come back, and goats and sheep especially can drink like once a day and survive on that. They can do very well, cattle or water hogs. But sheep and goats can handle being watered once a day. And so when you put a well in, it expands the grazing area all around that well. Not only that, you can put your tent here, all right? And you can water it for washing, all right? So if you are going out as far as you can and your sheep have time to get back and drink, you can do a lot around that well. So if we put another well over here, you see how that is? It expands all the useful area, all that forage and brush and trees and shrubs. You can't get them unless you have this well. So the Philistines had gone and filled up the wells with stones for a couple reasons. Maybe it was because they were getting nasty and they just didn't want anybody to get diseased. But also, if they wiped out the wells, then nobody else could be there and settle that area until their children or their grandchildren wanted to move into the area. They didn't want people living here. They wanted to be clean and open. So they filled them all in. And now Abimelech says to Isaac, "Go from us. You are much mightier than we." And here's a thing. God told Isaac to be here. He told him in a dream. I've never had God tell me anything in a dream. I've never had anything that direct. He said, "You stay here for a little while, and I will bless you." He stayed there for a while, and God blessed him. Now Abimelech says, "You go from us, for you're much weightier than we. Weak people are afraid of strong people. So the stronger and more successful you are, the more people are afraid of you." Jesus was not crucified on the cross because he didn't raise a ruckus or draw large crowds. He was crucified on the cross for being successful. Okay? This does not correspond to my particular problems over there, by the way. I was not suffering because I was successful. It was the other way around, actually, but that's beside the point. All right? So, what is Jacob supposed to do here? Didn't God tell him to be here? Didn't God tell him, "I want you to sojourn here"? And he was big. He was strong. He had servants. He could have mounted a resistance. Okay? God told him to stay here for a bit. God never told him to move, but Abimelech did, all right? God closed the door on Isaac staying in Gerar. And Isaac said, "Okay." All right? He moved on. And Isaac departed thence, verse 17, and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. Isaac is an example here of how to handle discouragement, frustration, and jealousy. Okay? He has the capacity to say, no, I'm going to stay right here, and you guys have to leave me alone. This is ridiculous. Okay, what is meekness? Meekness is strength under control. All right? Isaac is a good example here. So he moves out and digs another well. He digs out the well that Abraham had dug. Digs another one. Now he can go all around. And nobody's using the land. They can't use the land. There was no well there before, so nobody can use it. So he's being a pioneer. He is following the commandment of God to spread out, to populate the earth, to be fruitful and multiply, and to replenish the earth, to subdue it, to make this land something it wasn't before, okay? He now, because of his development, because of his efforts to find water, he is now making this land available. That's wonderful. That's what God wants us to do. Who is he turning into? He's turning into a good man. All right? And when he does, the Philistines are frustrated. Okay? Well, he has a springing well there. It's an artesian well. And the herdmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdmen, saying, "The water is ours." And he called the name of that well Esek, which Esek means quarrel. All right? So the Philistines somehow had this kind of gray idea that this well should be ours because it's close to us. Even though he did all the work, even though he was the one that was funding the work for all that, they were frustrated with him and they hated him wrongly. Now there is no despising like those who despise somebody for no reason at all. All right? It's a bad deal. They hated him. They wanted him to go away, and he called it Esek. They said the land is, maybe they thought to themselves, well, the land is ours, so the well is ours. Get out of here. So he did. He moves on. He builds another well. He digs out another well, and he starts going around here. And guess what? They follow him there. Okay? And he called the name of it Sitna. Sitna means enmity. The dictionary says synonyms for enmity are hostility, grudge, hatred, and bitterness. All right? So he has two nasty wells here, very frustrated. And I want to say something about this. When I was a child, I kind of thought that if somebody was mean to you, you just said, oh, well, and moved on. Said, oh, well, move on. Jacob doesn't say, oh, well, and move on. Okay? He names these wells after the bad things that happened to him and did not say, oh, well. He moved on, but he said, this isn't right. He had a righteous sense of what ought to have happened. He finally finds another well, and they finally leave him alone. He calls it Rehoboth, which means room. There is some possibility that this name is actually wishful thinking. There is some possibility then later they pushed him, they sent him away from this well yet besides. And he has to go to Beersheba again. By now the drought is over. And again, he has not heard from God yet. He has not heard from God. He builds an altar, goes to Beersheba, he builds an altar. He's been hounded through closed doors for three wells, possibly three, for two for sure and possibly three. He went to Beersheba, verse 24, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father, fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. One of the things God often says is fear not. That is something when you're finding the will of God, do not be afraid. God has you. It will be okay. It will be okay. He's got you. You might not understand. You may be afraid, but you don't have to be. He has a plan. It's going to be all right. Jacob was afraid of being the last of his line. Jacob was afraid that God would not bless him and he would not multiply his descendants. And although God has blessed him tremendously, and that's actually why he's having trouble, he's still afraid, and God calms him down. But he doesn't actually tell Isaac what to do. And many times when we're trying to find God's will, our relationship to God is the most important thing, not what to do. Who are you? When people are upset with you, and enemies are pushing you out, you need to find God. There is nothing that happens to the child of God that does not drive him to be a better person, and eventually everything works out for good for those that love God. But that fact by itself is not good enough. We need a connection to the creator of the universe in these times, all right? The will of God is that you connect with him, not what, who. Who are you becoming? Who are you becoming? Can you imagine being Isaac's servant? I think I'd be tired of being Isaac's servant. We're digging a well for the fourth time. Are you kidding me, all right? So what does Isaac do? He must have been a leader of men who could command his people to continue to do tasks that would benefit them and him and we could bring life to the whole community. He helped them to understand why he wanted to do it. It's much easier to rouse a mob and go kill off a couple of Philistines and tell them what's going on. That's fun. But to calmly and meekly back down, go find another place, dig another well, that's hard work. We can waste a lot of time and energy being frustrated and angry with injustice and things. Or we can dig another well. We can dig another well. Then Abimelech went to him, verse 26, from Gerar, and Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. Can you imagine what it was like to see these guys coming up the valley or up the path? I'm sure one of the herdmen saw them and was like, guess who's coming? All right? And Jacob goes out to them. Isaac, verse 27, goes out to them and says, wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me, have sent me away from you? All right? Isaac does not pretend they haven't hated him in the past. There's two truths here that we have to hold together. One is that we do need to forgive, and the other one is that people can have treated us very poorly. What did Joseph say to his brothers when his father died? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. You can't have good people without having bad people. We can't have maturity without immaturity. And Isaac holds their feet to the fire. He does not pretend that they've always been nice to him. He doesn't welcome them and say, hey, what are you doing? Good to see you. He goes out and he says, what are you doing here? You guys hated me. And you notice that Joseph did the same thing. He kind of held their feet to the fire too. And when Jesus was being tried, he did not just, oh, hey, if you guys want to crucify me, you go right ahead. No big deal. That wasn't actually what happened. He told them that they were wrong. We do need to forgive. Verse 28, it's hard for me to read these words because, I mean, these people have been brutal with him. They have kicked him out, number one, kicked him out, number two, kicked him out, number three, and possibly kicked him out again. They say, verse 28, we saw certainly the Lord was with thee, and they said, let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee. But thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of the Lord. Okay. They're afraid of God, all right? They look back on what happened, and they're afraid that he's going to be upset, and maybe he's gathering his forces and come make an example of them, and they don't want that to happen. This is quite a turnaround in attitude from what they had before. But Isaac made them a feast, and they ate, did eat and drink. Isaac is quick to forgive and to take care of them as his guests. Although he does not forget what they did, he forgives them for what they did. It's important. We do need to forgive evil. And they rose up in the morning, betimes in the morning, early in the morning, and swore to one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. God never talked to him through all of this. God never gave him direction through all of this. He did the right thing because he was becoming the right man. It is important. It is fair to be cautious when we have enemies. It's also important to be quick to forgive and smooth things over as quickly as possible. Verse 32. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged and said unto him, we have found water. Isn't that an amazing coincidence? Again, God did not promise him water. God did not come to him in a dream and say, you're going to get water. God did not say to him, if you forgive these people, you're going to have water the next day. None of that happened. But when he forgave his enemies and moved on with his life, God sent him water the next day. It is Isaac was not in this alone. He was dependent on God to help him, and God rewarded him directly. There was no promise that God would do this, but the timing is impeccable. This is the blessing of God. And he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is called Beersheba unto this day. We see that Isaac had a mixture of finding the will of God. He was told directly to stay here and that God would bless him. But after that, it was very, very opening and closing doors kind of situation. And as he set an example for us to follow, he was growing in maturity and in humility and meekness. And in the middle of all his efforts to do what was right and to make a living, he found God. And that is what we're after, isn't it, really? We don't want to do the will of God. We want to find God in all of this. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the example of Isaac. I pray that you would bless each person here who seeks you. I pray that they would learn patience as they seek your will and seek your presence in their life. And may we draw closer to you and know your joy and your peace and your love through all our trials and tribulations. And sometimes when we're tired and hurting and not sure what's going on, Lord, give us strength and help us to draw closer to you. In Jesus' name, amen.